Luke shivered. "Is she all right, Leia?" The older man nodded.
"Ashgard forbade Zim to go near her. He's almost completely enslaved to Zim. But at least until the Reliant was ready, they couldn't let anyone be sure of her fate. Ironic, isn't it, that Zim, who started out life as an appetizer, should..."
Luke stared at him, startled. "As a what?"
"Beldorian chef, Zubindi, was always experimenting with insects to enhance their flavor. He decided to mutate a drock, and before anyone realized what was going on, it had grown and achieved intelligence."
Ligeus's breath went out in a sigh.
"I kept him away from Leia, from Lady Solo, as well as I could. It's been a long time since I've cared for anything or anyone apart from my own survival. But she was kind and very brave."
The man's voice sank to a whisper again.
"I fear I've left this evil scheme rather late. I was lying to Zim. The program that will take the Reliant out past the gun stations is finished. And the first load of spook crystals is ready to be shipped."
Luke winced, but Ligeus Oblivious went on.
"And crystals are not the only thing it will carry. It will bear Zim to some headquarters where he will not be affected by sunlight. Zim, and as many drocks as he cares to take with him, to draw life from others. And so it will go until he has virtually sucked the life out of half the galaxy."
In the dark of the Transit Galactic Shipping Warehouse on Psi-Block 12, a flare of white sparkled. There was a hiss as of an electric welding arm and the sudden stink of sizzling plastine. Nearby, a muffled voice complained.
"Really, R2, if I had known that Master Yarbok's plan to get us to Psi-Block 12 consisted of mailing us parcel post..."
The droid's adventures had continued. After the Gotal captain of the quarantine enforcement cruiser had had them impounded and the Chadrafan journalist imprisoned in the airlock, R2 had taken matters into his own power core. He directed 3PO to disable the opening mechanism on the airlock and freed the Chadrafan. Then the three fugitives stole a ship belonging to some Aquilish smugglers, whom the Gotal was also questioning. Now the two droids found themselves alone in a dark warehouse. Bodies were strewn about the floor. There was no sign of life. Once again, R2 got to work, hooking circuits and wires, sending 3PO on scavenging expeditions. 3PO protested,
"It's useless, R2. If there's known to be a plague here, no one's going to come near enough to even hear a distress signal."
Still, when R2 gave his instructions, 3PO obeyed. The signal went out in BASIC and every one of the 6 million galactic languages in which the protocol droid was fluent. Han Solo slapped the comm button on the view screen of the Doran base controller.
"What do you mean you can't get a response from Psi-Block 12? There should be a half dozen cruisers in port there."
Han and Lando had had a nightmarish flight to the Doran orbital station. Leaving Bagsho, they had run smack into an Imperial invading fleet. TIE fighters had been dispatched. While Lando had dodged and veered the Falcon, Chewie and Han had manned the gun turrets, dispatching two of their pursuers before thick dust clouds and floating chunks of ice discouraged pursuit. Watching the last two TIEs retreat into the distance, Han had remarked, "Either they're too short-handed to risk a scout in this mess, or they don't think we're worth stopping for." Lando glanced at him.
"Or they think they got us with that last shot."
By the time they walked into the office of the Doran controller, Han was in no mood to be told that no vessels or crews could be released to him from the slender reserves still at the station. The controller faced him.
"Captain Solo, if you please. We have barely gotten the plague isolated on this base. The insurgent faction is equipped with suborbital and supraorbital vessels that have wreaked havoc on this station. This is not the time to strip our forces."
Han spoke slowly, trying to hold down his temper.
"The sector is being invaded."
The controller was inflexible.
"Then why have I not been contacted by either the Chief of State or the Senate Inner Council?"
When she said Chief of State, she fixed him with a dark eye. She knew perfectly well who he was married to. Han drew a deep breath and let it out.
"You're right." Leia always started negotiations by saying, "You're right."
Maybe I'd better see if I can contact the Chief of State on the private channel. It sometimes works better than the military ones. Han grabbed Lando and hauled him out to the corridor. Quarantine signs were everywhere. Han whispered, "Does Wingtip Thiel still operate out of Algar?"
"Wingtip?"
Lando looked confused at the sudden introduction of one of their less reputable computer slicer colleagues.
"I think so."
"Can he still slice into the Algar Pleasure Dome's central computer core?"
"Are you kidding? Wingtip could slice into Fleet Central and forge the personnel records of any corporation in the galaxy without anybody being the wiser. But what..."
Han interrupted. "Get the first ship you can out of here to Algar. Tell Wingtip I need the best holofake of Leia he can make. And this is what I want her to be saying."
Leia and Callista sat apart from the others. Callista spoke sternly.
"You cannot afford to be weak, Leia. You cannot afford to let this kind of thing happen to you ever again."
Leia nodded slowly.
"No, I know that."
Callista stood and unhooked the lightsaber from her belt. The blade slid forth like a lance of summer into winter's dark.
"Then let's begin."
Leia found that sparring with Callista was in some way easier than sparring with Luke, though Callista was the same height as her brother and was no less exacting a teacher. Still, Callista understood the differences in technique required of Leia's lesser height and lighter weight, and was far more conscious of distance and timing than any man Leia had ever worked with. Callista roused a tiny curl of smoke from the rock, a centimeter from Leia's much-taped golden boot.
"Footwork. Don't be afraid of your spirit. Don't always be watching yourself."
Leia's breath steadied. The weapon felt more stable in her hands, more a part of herself. Bay came into the circle of torchlight, his scarred, thin face intent.
"They're moving on the gun station from Ruby Gulch. Dozens of them. On other gun stations as well."
As Leia and Callista prepared to follow the others to the caves where their Koopas and speeders were hidden, Leia asked,
"How did he know that?" "Voices tell them. Voices that speak in their minds if they sleep in certain places far back in the hills or drink preparations of certain herbs. Bay is a healer, strong in the Force. Many of the listeners are."
Vehicles and animals began their swift trek through the icy darkness of pre-dawn, flowing like water down the silent canyons. For a while, Callista and Leia traveled in silence in an old speeder. Then Callista spoke thoughtfully.
"There's a woman in Hueg Sul who has interests in shipping. When this is over, I'm going to contact her, see if I can get myself off planet in a cargo lifter and work my passage elsewhere. Are you going to tell Luke you've seen me?"
Leia paused.
"I'd like to. Yes, I think it would be best."
Callista nodded.
"Make him understand if you can. Tell him I will love him to the end of my life, but that mine is a life of which he cannot be a part."
Across the crystal ridges, snakes of white lightning flickered in the dawning light. Leia grabbed the railing of the speeder as it rocked and swayed. Glittering crystals at the foot of the cliffs leaped upward like toothed whirlwind. Bay's eyes were shut, listening deeply.
"There is one who brings this storm at his will, summons and directs it."
With a droid's infinite patience, C-3PO had been broadcasting his distress call in every language he knew. Finally, he threw his arms up.
"It isn't any use, R2. I expect we'll sit here until our power cells run down and chaos and destruction will encompass the Republic." "You're right. We did our best." "Oh, thank goodness."
3PO pointed to the dark transparasteel where the red track of descending retros had appeared. The two droids stepped through the doorway to see before them an Imperial Fleet Sinar IPV system patrol craft lowering its ramp.
"Oh, dear."
A few minutes later, the two droids were ushered into the ship to be brought before the captain. The office doors slid open. The woman who sat in the room's single chair was tall and athletic in a stripped-down version of the Imperial officer's uniform. Red hair hanging down her back, and eyes cold as ball bearings. 3PO identified her at once.
Good heavens, R2, I seem to have been given inaccurate data. According to my most recent information, Imperial Admiral Dalla should be dead.
Dalla said softly, I am. Han Solo wondered whether there was any insanity in his family. He folded his arms, considering the vista afforded him from the Falcon's viewport. 2 CEC gunships, half a dozen smaller cruisers, and twice that many escorts, X-wings, and E-wings. They hung pale and silvery against the darkness of real space. It was true they represented the newest Republic equipment, but all of them, he knew, were understaffed, with men and women pushed to the brink of exhaustion. None of them was a match for what he knew lay ahead. But it wasn't a bad turnout for a faked video and a lot of bluster and fast talk. He turned from the viewport to the main screen, where Lando, who'd hitched a ride back from Algar with the fleet, and his Celestin co-pilot were handling the jump extrapolations, while Chewbacca studied the sensor readouts. Pick 'em up? He asked. Where are they headed? Lando tapped a few numbers. Well, judging by the point at which they came out of hyperspace, it's Paduceus Corios. Couldn't be Nam Corios, that's just a rock. Yeah, but by an amazing coincidence, it's the rock city Ashgad comes from. Every entrepreneurial bone in Lando's body was offended to the marrow. But that's crazy. Who'd want anything on Nam Corios? I don't know. But I think we're going to find out. Course for Nam Corios. Possible interception on return to real space, so keep your heads up. Han turned back to the readouts. 3 Star Destroyers, half a dozen Karaks, 2 Interdictors, and the swarms that didn't even register on the readout. The deadly clouds of CCIR space needles waiting to cut them to pieces the minute they came out of hyperspace. He had to be crazy. Punch it, Chewie. As the Mopquin flew down the canyons, Luke felt the violence of the force storm that surrounded the Bleak Point gun station. Igeus whispered,
I've never seen it like this, never.
All this so Seti Ashgad can disable a gun station, Luke thought, and create a corridor through which a ship can fly. As they came out of the canyon above the gun station, Luke said softly, they're in. Most of the palisade that had crowned the ancient tower had been torn away by the violence of the uncontrolled force. Luke watched a rusted beam fly from the ground, dragging after it a tangle of wire. On the top of the tower, Rationalist and Theran forces were still fighting. Rationalists struggling to get to the top as raggedly dressed Therans fought them hand to hand to keep them from damaging the gun. Igeus pointed to a round floater some distance from the base of the walls.
Deldorian's there.
Luke could see the coiled shape of the giant hut on it, muscular and serpentine. Not at all like Jabba's slothful bulk.
What do we do?
Asked Igeus. Luke began to back the speeder up the canyon again the way they had come.
We hold on tight.
Luke, wailed Igeus, hiding his eyes. The speeder cleared the 25-meter gap between the last ridge of the mountain shoulder and the top of the tower like a necked battle dog. Luke cut the turbos and hit the brake, shouting as he skidded among the combatants who scattered before him.
You've got to stop this. You're being used. Seti Ashgad only wants to open this planet so Lorinar Corporation can strip mine. He doesn't care about medical supplies or water pumps or machinery for you.
Luke looked around at the dusty, bloody faces, the angry eyes, not wanting to believe.
Someone said, Shoot him!
Luke reached forth with the force and pulled the man's blaster awry before he could get the shot off. The bolt of energy scattered chips from the wall of the stairway housing behind him.
He's right!
Behind Luke, the door opened, and Leia stepped through. Grimy in tatters, her hair hanging in her eyes and her palms and knuckles bandaged.
She reached into a pocket of the two big trousers she wore and produced a wad of computer printouts. Here's a copy of Ashcad's correspondence with the CEO of Lorinar, with Moff Gatellis of Antimeridian, with pawns and cat's paws in the Republic Council.
Caslow blustered angrily. Which doesn't mean you didn't compose this yourself, girl.
But others were pulling the plast from Leia's hands, reading the memoranda, the deals, the concessions, and becoming incensed.
An installation in Thornwind Valley? 6 months forcible recruitment? A man can't live a week up there.
Mandatory labor pool?
Transfer of material. Isn't the real word for that theft?
Price-free standardization on spooks? At 67 creds?
Occupation fleet? Who said anything about an occupation fleet?
Luke pointed upwards. The occupation fleet is in orbit now. Several of the rationalists had electro-binoculars and focused them skyward, where pin lights of brightness flared. Under the spate of exclamations and curses, Leia threw her arms around Luke in a fierce hug.
What about Zim? Ashcad's...
Luke hugged her. I know about Zim. Leia continued. If the Council really did manage to get ships to stop Gatelli's fleet, he'll still try to lift off in the Reliant with all that Drox he can bring. She looked up quickly as Ligeus emerged from the chariot.
Ligeus!
She flung her arms around him, and he returned her embrace.
My dear child, I'm so glad to see you safe.
Luke demanded, Listen, Ligeus, how much does Ashcad know about the software on that vessel? Can he program it? Leia interrupted impatiently.
Of course he can. Seti Ashcad was one of the top hyperdrive engineers of the Old Republic. The original Z-95s were his design.
Luke stared at her blankly.
His design? They were making Z-95s 50 years ago.
Leia continued in a rush.
Seti Ashcad is the original Seti Ashcad. Zim's been keeping him alive all these years.
There was a rising clamor, men and women jostling and shoving aside Gurney Caslow's heated protests of Ashcad's good intent. Sheets of hard copy were flourished in dust and blood-covered hands. The Theran cultists had come down from their defensive positions on the gun shielding to join in the fray. Caslow broke from the mob, seized a belt of grenades, and scrambled up toward the muzzle of the cannon. Leia yelled, Stop him! But was too late. Someone fired a blaster rifle just as Gurney hurled the grenades. A dozen lines of cold light stitched the man like deadly needles. But no one had thought to fire at the grenades he had thrown. And a moment later, a deep, shuddering concussion shook the building. White smoke belched from the cannon mouth.
Leia grabbed Luke's arm. There's an armored headhunter in Ashcad's hangar, and an old blast boat. You can mount the main turret guns in the headhunter. That'll give you enough firepower to bring him down. I'm coming with you.
3PO finished telling his story to the stern, red-haired captain.
Quite honestly, Madam Admiral, that's all I'm able to tell you.
Her voice was harsh.
My title is Admiral, droid. Not Madam Admiral. I was an officer of the Imperial Fleet.
Her eyes were defeated.
Once, Tarkin and I together could have ruled the Empire. All I seek now is a place to live out the rest of my life where I will not be disturbed. I thought I had found such a place on Pedusis Curios.
3PO's copious data banks contained a great deal of very alarming information about this woman. One of the most brilliant commanders in the Imperial fleet, but a mad bantha, a loose gun firing at random in battle. A woman of formidable competence and terrifying anger. She asked him now,
And what do I find?
3PO had never been good at distinguishing rhetorical from actual questions.
Invasion? The Death Seed Plague? Wholesale rebellion? Looting?
Be silent! I find your vague answers very suspect. Fortunately, many, many years ago, I had a friend who taught me how to communicate with droids.
3PO said with genuine interest,
How very kind of him.
But R2, quicker on the uptake, made a nervous attempt to back away, thwarted by the restraining bolt that Dalla's sergeant-at-arms had taken the precaution of installing on both droids before bringing them into her presence. Dalla hooked a coaxial analysis cable into R2's side and flipped a switch on the analysis kit. Dalla's green eyes narrowed.
Now, tell me what's happening in the Meridian sector.
Lando flipped through half a dozen data sectors, then cut back to another screen of scan field to check on the next pass of the vicious needle-like attackers.
What the blazes are those things?
Chewbacca yowled something through the comm from the rapidly freezing rear quarter where he was floating near the ceiling to fix burnt-out wiring through hissing masses of emergency foam. Han pivoted the Millennium Falcon through the desperate series of zigzags and loop-the-loops that was the only possible defensive strategy against the strange vessels. Lando's hands flicked over the shield controls.
Most I can figure is they've got some kind of CCIR technology like synth droids.
Around them, the Republic ships Corain and Fire Eater snaked and wove in a desperate attempt to remain in position near Nam Koryos until the actual invading fleet showed up to fight. Stars whirled and flashed past the viewport as Han put the vessel through another series of evasions.
Are you kidding? You know what a synth droid costs?
Lando could never leave an explanation unfinished.
I know that synth droid technology is based on a kind of programmable crystal, and that's what jacks up the price. But if somebody synthesized those crystals or found a way to get them cheap, there's no problem.
There's a problem for us.
Dalla sat back from the primary readout screen.
Grand Moff Gateles.
The screens held the record of R2's long battle to retain the secret files concerning Leia's disappearance and the information Yabok Yem had obtained from the salvage. Dalla spoke to herself in a soft conversational tone.
A quibbling, incompetent, boot-licking little sand maggot still has his sycophant larm on a leash, I see, with whom he shared the test results at the Academy when he was promoted to captain over my head. Selling out to Lorinar Corporation, a gang of legalistic thieves who'd peddled their sisters to either side so long as they got paid. Slime moles, all of them.
She touched an almost invisible toggle in the arm of her chair.
Yelnor, get me a conference with the captains of all the ships.
Ships? Inquired 3PO, startled.
Ships. I am the president of an independent company of settlers, over 3,000 of us counting spouses and children. We who were loyal to the old ways entered a contract with the warlord Kian for 1.5 billion acres on Paduceus Corius to colonize and to live as we see fit.
She tapped R2 on his domed cap.
And I have no intention of seeing my investment, our investment, come to nothing.
Leia adjusted Aunt Jin's electro-binoculars, wind and dust tearing at her long hair.
He's behind us,
Luke asked. Beldorian? She dropped back down into the sheltered cockpit, began checking loads on the flamethrowers and blaster rifles that Arvid and Yumali Darm had thrust after them on their departure. All bore the Lorinar logo. The hangar doors were locked. So were the doors that led to the stairway up to Ashgad's house. They blasted their way in with ion blasters. Luke and Leia halted in the doorway of the chamber where Luke had rescued Lygias from the life drinker. The floor was a creeping sea of Drox. Brother and sister opened fire with the flamethrowers, swept the whole room in roaring sheets of heat. The gateway that led to the construction compound was locked, and Luke laid a hand on Leia's shoulder as she brought up the ion blaster again.
It's shielded.
Luke's lightsaber hummed. Leia glanced back toward the blown-out door of the stairway. Luke knew who it was that she felt behind them. He could almost see the hut, ascending each step with a heavy, coiling loop of his great, worm-like body, eyes rubies in the dark. The black hurricane of the Force swirled around him uncontrolled. Luke ran the lightsaber into the lock's works, tested the door switch. It vibrated but held. He peered in.
There's another lock behind a wall hatch. Here.
Leia had her own blade out. The floor shivered suddenly with the force of liftoff. Luke grimaced.
They're off.
Over the top of the wall, they could see the square gray shape of the Reliant springing skyward. At the same moment, Leia thrust her lightsaber into the second lock and the door slid open. A couple of spook crystals lay on the permacrete floor of the hangar. There were Drocks, too, tiny ones, dying in the glare of the pallid sunlight where they had fallen out of whatever shielded container Zim had carried them in. And on the other side of the open bay stood the headhunter, its engine hatch open, a gutted tangle of wires hanging down. Luke swore and raced across to it. Leia was already running toward the blast boat, likewise gutted but otherwise unharmed. "Can you fix it?" she yelled. "They didn't have time to cripple the guns."
"I think so."
Luke began making a fast diagnostic. "Get the guns," he yelled from halfway within the hatch. She snatched up an extractor and core couplers and raced across the permacrete to the blast boat. She had dragged one gun over to the headhunter and was starting on a second when she heard the Hutt's breath, stertorous, rasping. Beldorian the Splendid moved fast, huge muscle rolling beneath his squamous hide.
"Don't test me, little princess."
His own blade stretched forth with a deadly thrumming, a pallid violet.
"I may be a lazy old slug now, but I am Beldorian still."
Leia struck. Step, step, thrust, as Callista had showed her. A hard, clean slash like lightning, and Beldorian barely got out of the way. But his counterstrike was fast, the strength of it nearly breaking her wrists as she intercepted it on the blade. She stepped back in, pressing him, her attention narrowed to nothing but the monstrous thing before her and the shining blades. He had enormous striking range, flinging forward like a serpent so that she threw herself sidelong, rolled under the paralyzing wallop of his tail, and was on her feet again, the blade streaming fire from her hand. "In and out," Callista had said. "It's the only way for a woman to fight." He struck, and she raised her blade to defend, her mind open with the force, feeling that he was going to switch to lateral again. He did, and she was in under the blow, and slashing a long, streaming, sidelong cut that went through the soft green body like burning wire. She flung herself away from him fast, for the huge bulk of him burst open, gouts of fluid and flesh exploding forth, as Luke jumped out from under the headhunter and into its cockpit. She saluted Luke with the blade, and he saluted back, their eyes meeting for an instant, before he slammed the cockpit shut. Luke knew what it was that he saw. Her first victory. The victory over the shadow of Vader. The victory of acceptance of herself as a Jedi. He hit the lifters and the headhunter rocketed into the sky. The headhunter rose faster than the Reliant, faster than most interceptors, for it had been designed to outmaneuver the gun stations. Course controls were adapted to the positions of each gun station, Ligeus's calculations beautifully precise. Luke punched in the program to Bleak Point, knowing that had to be the way the Reliant was going as well. He saw the gray ship rising far ahead, making for the flurry of explosions and lights. There was a Republic Corsair hanging in space far away to his left, being torn to pieces by tiny darting CCIR needles. The things the Empire wanted. The things Lorinar was going to give them. Beyond, at the farthest range of his vision, he saw the fleet. Imperials, two, three Republic vessels. Was that the Falcon, dodging and twisting, trying to fire at the Imperial ships that were surrounding them? A thousand tiny flashes of fire as the needles swirled around them. Luke's thumb hit the firing button. White light glanced forth. The next second, a terrible concussion ripped his ship, tossed it spinning. He glimpsed the Reliant still going on its way untouched, glimpsed something small and fast and black pass over him. Another shot, and his whole console went red. He twisted at the joystick, trying to drag the headhunter to stability, but he was spinning out of control, falling into Namcorius' gravitational pull. He got off a wing laser shot at the Reliant, saw fire explode from her aft engines, but she only drifted off course, and his long-range pickups brought in the faint crackle of Seti Ashgad's voice, calling for an intercept. Luke saw a small Carrick detached from the Imperial fleet begin to make its way toward the drifting craft. Before the Imperials knew what they had loosed,
the death seed would grow across the stars. The headhunter was falling out of control. The heat in the cockpit was unbearable. He was above an enormous seabed, snaking lines of sills marching away into the distance. The ten cousins. Other circles, other lines pointing towards the great glittering outcrops of spooks in the hills. There was a pattern to them, visible only when coming in from above like this. Luke pulled back on the joystick as hard as he could, threw his mind open to the force, and brought her in. Afterwards, he didn't remember getting out of the headhunter before it exploded. He knew he'd probably used the force to damp physical reactions until he'd crawled to safety. And then he remembered the pattern of the sills. The listeners said the rocks spoke to them. Luke thought, "You're alive." Luke passed his thoughts to the sills, more amazed than he'd ever been in his life. Assent flowed over him. "Alive, alive," like an echo. "All this time," they agreed, "thinking and dreaming and speaking and singing. The sea formed us, and the sea went away. The planet fed us from the fires of her heart. Little people here and there, but not important. Not until they took us, took our..." The word was impossible to translate in his mind. "Brother self," he thought, "a part of their minds." The deep tide of their anger flowed over him, anger for their kidnapped kin, taken, zapped with the horrible electronic realignment so that they became slaves. Luke sensed the incomprehension of those slow, timeless beings about what it was that they saw. But he understood. And then his consciousness was in the cabin of the Reliant. Two synth droids lying dazed on the floor, their flesh a rotting mass, but their minds receiving impressions. Siti Ashgat sat at the controls, his face bleeding, his hair, his clothing, his body crawled with drox. And Zim stood behind him. Zim, with his robe open to the waist, every pulsing orifice and squirming pendule moving.
"Reliant?"
crackled a voice over the comm system.
"This is Grand Admiral Lahm of the Anti-Meridian Sector."
Luke was so startled by the vision that he could barely gather his thoughts. The Tsils could see this, but could not understand. A second vision flashed in his mind, of the Reliant rising against the great purple-white gem of the planet seen from space, of the Kariks drawing closer to it, and, weirdly, of the voices transmitted between them, picked up over the electronic consciousness of the needles themselves, and relayed back to their kindred Sills.
"This is Grand Admiral Lahm of the Anti-Meridian Sector Imperial Fleet. In the name of Grand Moff Gatellis, I am empowered to greet you personally."
Luke said to the crystals,
"Focus through me."
He felt their awareness converge on his. The force in them twined with the force within his bones and flesh and mind.
"Tell them to destroy Ashgat's ship."
He reached out his mind to those hovering, darting consciousnesses in the black gulfs of space.
"Do this for me. And I swear to you, wherever they are, they will be brought back here."
He felt the consultation of them like an endless wave spreading out across the planet. And then it came back, force, and more force, shining currents of it streaming through his body, unbearably bright. He saw Seti Ashgat trying to get to his feet, stumbling and falling among the synth droids that littered the floor. Saw Zim draw in a breath of ecstasy, of world-devouring delight. Luke's eyes were closed, so he didn't see far above him in the blue, unchanging sky the tiny brightness of an explosion. Then he fainted.
and lay unconscious beside the slow-rising pillar of oily smoke in the midst of the wasteland of light. Given the circumstances under which they had last parted, the shuttle journey down to the surface of Namkoreos could not be other than awkward for Han Solo and Admiral Dalla. C-3PO, who accompanied them with Chewbacca, R2-D2, and a considerable number of Dalla's co-emigres, did his best to ease the tension by filling Solo in on recent events. But everyone was at a loss to account for the fact that those supposedly programmable space needles had unexpectedly left off attacking the Small Republic fleet and had descended upon the gray ship rising from the planet's surface, blasting to eternity both it and the Imperial Carrick that had gone out to tow it to the safety of the Imperial fleet. Even as the debris cloud of the Reliant and its escort was dispersing, the entire squadron of space needles had turned and swirled down into the atmosphere, heading for the surface of the planet. Dalla glanced over her shoulder at Han.
"From the time I was 16, the fleet has been my life. And now, this."
Han raised his eyebrows.
"Well, I can understand. You're not the only one who's ever been betrayed."
She started to jeer something back at him, then stopped herself.
"No, perhaps not."
The homing beacon from the surface brought them to the Bleak Point gun station, where the plane of crystal made a landing area for the shuttle. Wreckage from the force storm scattered the gravel for half a kilometer around the walls of the tower. Snarls of wire, broken beams, weapons burst by the violence of Beldorian's uncontrolled will. Rationalists and Therans alike were gathering around the walls, and the plane was a parking lot of speeders, speeder bikes, and Koopas, warbling and wheezing and scratching themselves. From their midst, two figures broke away, crossing to Han and Chewie at a run. Leia threw herself into Han's arms.
"Admiral Larm," she began.
Han finished for her.
"Is space dust. His fleet went back to Anti-Meridian to give him a nice memorial service. I don't think they're going to be back."
"You know what happened?"
"Pretty much. The plague's over three-quarters of the sector. There doesn't seem to be any way of stopping it. The boys at Med Central say it's like the Death Seed."
Luke came over to them, limping heavily on a stick.
"It is the Death Seed. The Guardian Sills have agreed to send some of their number off-planet to the sector medical facility to be installed in apparatus that will destroy the Drox. All they ask in exchange is that we return every spook crystal that has ever been taken off and programmed."
He went on, speaking softly.
"They knew about the Drox. They were aware when the Grismoth Dynasty ceded the planet with them to kill its political prisoners. They did their best for 7.5 centuries... to keep the Drox from getting off-planet. They invaded the dreams of the prophet Theris and his followers and instructed them to keep anything larger than a B-wing from taking off. Anything bigger would have had sufficient shielding to protect the Drox from the radiation. And there are seams of mineral wealth deep in the mountains that can be exported in small enough quantities to be ray-screened and still support those who take them off."
Umali Darm approached with Arvid and Aunt Jin.
"Which is just fine with me. I never liked that spook business. Too fragile. The ones with good color were too far back in the hills, and even a box or two of those things gave me the willies. That Theron Bay is already putting together an expedition for Rock Ivory with me and Arvid here."
They hurried on their way, Arvid waving back at Luke. Leia glanced in the direction of the shuttle and Admiral Dalla, and then back inquiringly at Han. He grinned.
"An old friend. Dalla showed up at the last minute to help out. She wants a diplomatic discussion and some assurances from you."
Luke turned to follow his sister and Han to the shuttle.
At least he'd have a reason to get up in the morning, he thought wryly. He would come back to this world to bring back the remains of the synth droids and space needles, to be realigned by the Guardians. A Theron was rappelling easily down the walls of the gun station, crimson coat and gray veil striking a familiar chord. The fighter who had thrown the grenades at the speeder, thought Luke, during that first battle he had seen. When the gawky, graceful figure reached the ground and walked toward Umali Darm's freighter, he saw the lightsaber swinging at the heavy leather belt, the long malt-brown hair as she pulled loose her veils, and his heart leapt. She turned at the freighter's ramp. She had always known if he was looking at her. For a long moment, they stood in stillness. He raised his hand to her.
Farewell.
Her shoulders relaxed, and he could feel the tension leave her, the fear that he would cross that open ground to tear anew all those fresh wounds by taking her in his arms. The time was past for that. In her stillness, he read her thought.
Please, understand.
I understand. She raised her hand to him, and he could feel her smile. Luke was at Ligeus' heels when they stepped into the forward lounge, and the red-haired woman seated near the viewport rose from her chair and turned to Leia.
Your Excellency?
But she said no more. She only stood transfixed, color draining from her face. It seemed to Luke that there was another face looking out from those bitter emerald eyes. A girl's face. In a whisper, Admiral Dalla said,
Ligeus?
Ligeus was staring as if at a ghost. Only no ghost could have brought such joy to a man's face.
Dalla?
They crossed to each other, stopped inches apart, as if after a lifetime of diverging paths they feared to touch.
Have you...
Ligeus' voice hesitated.
Have you had a good road all these years?
A long one, cruel in places.
You?
Yes. A long road, too. She put her hand to his face.
I've missed you, Ligeus.
Their lips met, afraid at first, then drinking deep as if they could never again have enough. No one in the lounge was the slightest bit surprised when Dalla and Ligeus made their exit without a word to anyone. Han drew Leia down beside him on the black leather couch.
I guess you'll have to have that conference some other time.
From the viewport, Luke watched the thin yellow track of Umali Darm's freighter as it lifted from the planet, streaked through the atmosphere and away.
She's all right, he thought.
It was like watching a hunt bird when, after years of servitude, its owner frees it to return to the woods.
She is well and strong. She'll find her way one day to the Force, to the light.
He felt at peace and strangely free. She had released him, he thought, to travel his road, wherever that road was going. He heard a soft step behind him, knew it was Leia before her hands touched his shoulders. Her voice was worried.
Are you all right?
Yes. I'm all right.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Planet of Twilight by Barbara Hambley. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel. Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Planet of Twilight is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1997, all rights reserved. The book Star Wars, Planet of Twilight is available wherever Bantam books are sold.